Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Doc Jones, private investor, becoming pretty well known on our show, but also quite well known on some of the other resource-focused blogs. And I have been posting some of Doc Jones' articles, really focused on his due diligence, on some of the companies that he owns, that he likes the work that's being done, and also finding value in stocks that are just not getting that attention that he thinks they deserve. Doc, I do want to talk about management teams, though. Everybody talks about management teams and how important it is to find those good management teams because you are investing with management. Look, there has been some recent news that has been negative for a management team in the sector, but if we're looking at broadly management teams, when you're doing your due diligence, what do you focus on? What, in your eyes, constitutes a strong management team? What type of actions do you like to see?
Hi, Corey. Thanks for having me back. Just to clarify for everyone, like, I'm a private investor. I don't work for anyone. So all the information I put out there is mine and mine alone. No one compensates for me for it. So it's just basically I put out the information on why I invest in a company. So management teams. Specifically, what I like to look for is I have a number of things on my checklist. Like a management team, I like to investigate where their past projects were, what was their success rate before, and where did they work before. Sometimes you'll see a new company and you go to LinkedIn, which I use often, and you find out the CEO's last job wasn't in the mining industry, and he's never been in the mining industry, or he was with cannabis, and before that he was in graphite, and before that he was in whatever the latest trend was. So you really want to make sure that they have the skill set that matches the project that they're undertaking. Another thing is to check what they're paying themselves. It's very important that the compensation matches the market cap and the upside that is feasible for the project they're working on. Also, a good thing to look at is if there's a change of control clause that is very favorable towards management, that can be disincentive, because in a down market, they'd be willing to sell the company for a lot less than it's actually worth so they can get a big payout. That happened with Cobalt 28, I can't remember, Cobalt something, where they had a $7 million payout. They sold everything at the bottom of the market and they cashed out and investors got left holding the bag. Yeah, those are important points. There's also the compensation part. Like, I know the situation that you're referring to off the top about something recently in the market. It's really terrible when that happens to investors, but it's also, as an investor, it's your responsibility to read the filings and know what you're buying into. It's all public information. If you don't like the compensation package or the amount of money or shares they're going to award themselves or at whatever price, don't put your money in. Doesn't matter how great the asset is. If you don't trust the management team, they will destroy shareholder value over the long term and short term. So I'd like to also see that management actually owns part of the company and is putting their own money in, and at a price that is favorable to where it trades currently or where you are investing. If a management team is getting millions of shares, they bought them at 5 cents and the stock's now at 50 or came public at 50 cents or 40 cents, they're already getting an 800% uplift there. But if you see management teams such as Cassiar Gold, as an example, where Steve Letwin, the chairman, is the largest single shareholder of the company. He also has been buying on the open market. Same with Marco Rock, the CEO. He's been buying on the open market. You know, so that's important about management teams. Another one is Amerita Resources. David Goer, his pay is less than $100,000 a year. All of them there, it's very conservative compared to the broad market, what other people are getting paid, as well as they have a high amount of shareholder holdings in the company as well. So those are some key points, Corey.
Absolutely. Hey, Doc, that's very interesting about Amerita Resources paying their management actually so low, because usually you see management salaries in the 200, 300 grand region, some lower, but also some much higher. Now, one thing that we should note is you can find this information. It is available on SEDAR, but you really have to do some digging. In SEDAR, it's not maybe the easiest to find some of this information. So in terms of the documents that you're reading, Doc, to me, it seems like it's a lot the management information circulars, and probably some other documents. Share with us the documents that you focus on, because again, CDAR can get a little bogged down with just all the filings companies do.
Yeah, there, you should always read every quarterly report in the management and analysis. There's the filing that has the financial statements, and then there's the separate filing that accompanies it, which is basically the management's explanation of things. And you should always read those, because in there, there'll be this information such as compensation, recent events, everything that you need, as well as go back to the original prospectus when they first came public. And you'll find out in there the ownership at what level they got their shares at, if there was any restrictions, were they going to escrow for a certain amount of time. In there also, in the quarterly and annual, there'll be a list of any agreements with third-party companies that can be owned by parts of the management team. And then you can start to do a little forensic analysis of whether or not there, if, for instance, let's say that the CEO also owns the drilling company, and the drilling cost is coming in at $400 a meter in an area where most other people are paying $200 a meter, then you pretty much know that he's just raping the company. So that's one you would avoid, obviously.
What about affiliations with other companies then, too? Because we do see a lot of management teams either as directors on other companies or also running other companies. How do you view these relationships?
You know, they can be an asset, and they can also be a detriment. It just depends on what it is, and you have to do your research. Like if you have if your technical advisor is also the technical advisor of 40 other companies, then you have to actually ask yourself, how much time is this person really going to devote to the project? You know, if a company is already in production and the CEO is also running another company, I wouldn't necessarily like that too much, because a company in production requires a lot of time and energy. Whereas an explorer, you know, depending on the drill season, things like that, they do have the time to be able to devote to other projects. Yeah. But one should always be mindful of those things to see what boards they sit on. And also, you know, do the research on those companies. How are those companies doing? What is their compensation package over there? So, yeah, it's really a case by case. Because like I said, with an exploration company or sometimes a development company, there are stages that where they're very busy for months and months, and then there's like 3 or 4 months where they can't actually really do a lot. So the expectation for them to do nothing and just be beholden to that one company is a little unreasonable.
That's fair. And you know what? Sometimes there are these teams out there too, right, that get projects, get companies up and running while they are also managing other companies because of the different stage of the assets. So that, in my eyes, also is completely fine. One more question on this aspect here, Doc Jones, is when we see individuals make the transition. So there's two different transitions that we see, one being from brokers to public companies, so being a broker, taking those relationships with you, and then running a public company. And on the other side, somebody working for some of these major miners in not a leadership role, but a pretty high up role, and then making the move into the junior sector to run companies there. Very different move from both of these. How do you analyze, or what are your general thoughts on these transitions that people make that can be very successful, but again, are very different?
Yeah, it depends. You know, like having a CEO whose past experience was in the capital markets can be an asset, you know, but I will only deal with a company like that as long as they have an extremely strong technical team, because I don't want a CEO whose main drive in the past has been about creating profit, right? I want the project to be moved along. I want actual value to be created in the ground. So generally, I prefer companies where the CEO is an economic geologist and has worked for majors before, because also those relationships can be exploited in the future, because ideally you invest in a junior miner that's going to have a project that a major or a mid-tier will want to buy out. And so having those prior relationships to exploit as things develop, I think, is a real asset. That's how I feel about those things. And if your CEO is a an economic geologist, mainly prior, then I want to see a really strong CFO who has capital markets experience. So I basically need both things within the C-suite.
Fair enough. Now, Doc Jones, let's talk a little bit about a company you have been writing a lot about. That is Emerita Resources, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol EMO, and on the OTC markets under the symbol EMOTF. Just to bring everybody up to speed, this is a high-grade zinc exploration asset within the company located in northern Spain. So not a jurisdiction that usually gets a lot of attention, but when you dive into the mining that's happening in Spain broadly, there's some good companies that are active in the country. Doc Jones, bring everybody up to speed on some of the highlights of the company, again, that you like.
Oh, well, this company was left for dead because they had two ongoing long lawsuits for the last 6 years. And then recently one lawsuit wrapped up and they won and were awarded the Pomogo land package against Trafficura, which is a huge mining company. And the Pomogo land package itself has about $7 billion in gross metal in the ground. And it's a polymetallic. It's zinc, lead, copper, gold, and silver. Then the other lawsuit, which is about to come to an end, as for the Andacollo land package, which has the old Los Frailes mine, as well as the Andacollo historic silver and copper open pit mine, which between them two, the high grade component of what's left there is over $23 billion. And the last, they're in the sentencing round now in the courts in Spain. The Superior Court, five judges unanimously reopened the case and sent it to the provincial court. The provincial court ordered the lower court to reopen and try nine people, two from the other company and seven government officials for crimes of corruption in the awarding of the tender. So basically the bottom line is, as soon as they announce that the outcome, all they need is one person to be found guilty, and the laws are very specific in Spain, that if there is a crime committed, that company is disqualified from the tender. The only other company that was involved in the tender was Emerita Resources, and Emerita Resources is actually the only company that can finish round one and round two of the qualifications needed to be awarded the tender. There's also that aspect to the case. So it's been going on for almost 7 years. But people are starting to recognize the value. Like when they won the first lawsuit, Eric Sprott, 3 hours later, took 10% of the company. And the CEO has been public about this as why Eric Sprott came in. It's because the combined resource has at least 400 million ounces of pure silver as the byproduct credit. So there's a lot of value there. And then talking about management teams, the way they've been creating value aside from fighting these court cases, is they recently just locked up two additional land packages, one that's trucking distance to Andacollo, which is the Nuevo Tintio land package, which has, you know, eight zones, a bunch of historic open pit mines. So a discovery there will be added to the Andacollo, which will then serve that mining complex, extending the life there. And then on the Pomogo, which they own 100% with no royalties, they just acquired the Ontario land package, which is on strike to the trend of the VMS deposits there. So currently they have about 14 million tons of high grade. And it's very feasible because also David, the CEO, is an economic geologist. He was responsible for one of the big discoveries of in the Bathurst camp, VMS camp there. So this is his specialty. So adding that land package will also, a few discoveries there. All these are within like 14 kilometers. So on the Pomogo with Ontario, they'll be able to exploit numerous deposits that will feed one mill. And you get these great economies of scale there. And yesterday he was on a webcast and he was asked about what does he figure an estimated cost per ton for mining and milling will be. And he said about 100 to 120. Right now, the current blended value of the ore at Pomogo is $500 a ton. So the margins are going to be extremely good there. So even let's say for whatever reason, they don't win the other lawsuit, you're left with a company that has a minimum of $7 billion that is growing in resource value. And the market cap is currently about, what, 90 million, 95 million, something like that, Canadian. And yeah, so it's a really fantastic story there. And it's at a time where we're coming into structural deficits in zinc, in copper, silver. So there's a tremendous amount of value that I see going forward. It's one of my largest holdings. I have interviewed and talked with the CEO and the president as well. Because I hold such a small portfolio of companies, I tend to be very involved with the management teams. And this was a company that I found wasn't getting enough coverage, and there was a lot of misinformation out there because there had been a slander campaign launched by the opposing company, which is Grupo Mexico, against them, as well as there was a few bashers that would troll around the boards spreading misinformation. Like one thing was the Romanero deposit on Pomogol is currently almost 12 million tons. And this one troller was putting out there that there's a nature reserve on there and they'll never get their permits. So I do what I do. I talked to the president of the company who's in country and I said, is there a nature reserve there? He said, no, there is no nature reserve. And actually the laws that were recently passed by Spain, the law that they passed is they made underground mining an essential industry, and that permitting and previous ground that was not open for exploration exploitation is now going to be added, as well as the Eurozone at the same time made an announcement they were going to inject 3.44 billion euros into the Iberian pyrite belt, specifically the province and the place where Amerita's projects are, to support mining. So I put that out there that this is all fiction. And, you know, that happens when you have a successful story. People will, for whatever reason, try to bash it because they went short or they're jealous because they didn't get in sooner. But these guys are just executing on every checklist, you know. So I'm really, really thrilled with them and happy with the work that they've been doing to create value there, actual real value. They have a drill program going on now at the La Infanta deposit, which it's amazing. Like these deposits were drilled 20, 30 years ago. And back then, Rio Tinto, and it was Phelps Dodge that did the drilling of La Infanta and Romanera. And back then, people were looking mainly for copper and open pits, right? So they ignored the high grade components of the deposits, and they've been left there for like 20, 30 years. And it's no wonder that they were in a court case battling Trafficura for this for 6 years, because it's so valuable and you run the economics on it. And I have, and you're looking at just at the Palmalgo land package as is, I come up with like a little over $2 billion in cash flow through the life of that mining complex. It's just, yeah, it's very incredible. And it's a great story and a very competent management team. And it's all just meat and potatoes exploration, meat and potatoes financial analysis. There's no magic, some companies, for them to be successful, they are introducing a new way of doing the mining, or a new way of extracting something that's never been done before, which I'm always leery of. This is just real simple extraction. You know, recovery rates will probably be around 75-80%. They'll run different production lines where they'll get a zinc concentrate and a gold copper concentrate, a silver concentrate, and it's a really, really great company.
Well, Doc Jones, thank you for sharing some of your insights again, and please keep on sending us your articles, your research on the companies that you like, because they are very, very well received on our site. Doc Jones, thanks again for your time. I hope you have a great weekend.
Sure, Corey. Yeah, I have an article coming out next week. I'll send it to you.